5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, ignition, liftoff.
Hi, everybody. I'm Brian Clapp, Director of Content for WorkinSports.com, and this is the Work in Sports Podcast. In pro sports, we've entered a world of exacting specialization. Take the NBA, for example. 3-and-D players, a term you never heard 10 years ago, is now something you hear all the time. Coaches say, I want you to hit open threes and play really tough defense. That's it. That's your exact role. Don't worry about crashing the boards or making the perfect no-look pass or bringing the ball up on offense. Just focus on being the best at this piece in the game where you fit. A guy like Trevor Ariza, you won't see his name on any top 20 list or even top 75, but he's carved out a specific role as one of the best 3-and-D players in the NBA, and it's in high demand. And he's turned it into about $84 million in lifetime earnings. Not too shabby. Same thing in baseball. Guys who can get on base are still all the rage. Or how often have you heard lately about guys with the right launch angle? Football. Players who can set the edge in the run, or clog up the middle, or receiving backs. Coaches and general managers have figured out they need to lower their overall expectations and focus intently on the things certain players do well. Putting players in a position to thrive, now that is the art of leadership. But you're tempering the expectations of them being able to do everything. The true superstars, the Kawhi Leonards, the Kevin Durants, the Mike Trouts, the J.J. Watts, they do it all. Put them in any role and they will destroy the competition. Harder to find, yeah, but pure gold when you do. The same holds true for the sports industry. Say someone wants to work in marketing. Well, there are a whole list of skills they could lean into. Digital, branding, social media, promotion, sponsorship, design, SEO. Most people nowadays are specializing, and there's nothing wrong with that. But someone who works in promotions may have no idea what it means to work in branding. And someone who wants to work in content strategy may not know anything about design or working with media buyers. They're leaning into their specific skills. But again, the true superstars are dangerous everywhere. Versatility rules. Being the person your boss knows can do just about anything has power and puts you in line for growth and promotion. So while there's nothing wrong with being specialized, oftentimes the quality you want to aim for is resourceful. Today's guest knows this better than most. Joe Lagaz is the director of marketing for the LA Clippers and has also worked in marketing for the San Francisco Giants, Adidas, the San Francisco 49ers, and the Seattle Mariners. He knows what it takes to make it in this business and how to stand out from the crowd. Listen in and learn from this leader of the sports industry. But first, the Work in Sports Podcast is brought to you by, well, WorkinSports.com. I'm promoting our own event. We have a Sports Career Accelerator two-day event coming up September 13th and 14th in Atlanta. This two-day event will put you behind the scenes and networking with executives and staff from the Atlanta Hawks, Braves, Falcons, United, College Football Hall of Fame, Mercedes-Benz Stadium, Phillips Arena, and more. One-on-one time with executives. They are teaching, they are sharing, they are networking, they're doing little micro interviews on the spot. It's a crazy cool event that we're very excited about. We are limiting it to the first 40 people because we want to keep this intimate and give you one-on-one exclusive time with these leaders of the sports industry. For more information and to be added to our interest list, visit workinsports.com/Atlanta. This event will crush any career event you've ever participated in before. Trust me. Now, back to the show. Here is Joe Lagaz. Hey, Joe, how's it going today?
Hey, great. How are you?
I'm doing really well, and I want to thank you. I know it's the off season, but in professional sports, there really is no off season. So thanks for taking a little bit of time to talk to us about your career.
Yeah, of course. My pleasure.
So sports marketing, it's definitely one of the more popular fields that we deal with. People are writing into us and asking all the time, wanting more information about sports marketing jobs. In fact, over 25% of the jobs that we have on Work in Sports are somehow related to marketing. But it's such a broad term. Help me out a little bit. Help me understand what somebody's initial career path might look like if they go to college and they get an education in marketing. What are their options? Like, as they start to look into the sports world, what kind of opportunities do you think are out there, and what kind of things do you think they might be doing?
Yeah, it is absolutely a very broad term. I think that they might be smart to identify kind of the area they really want to focus on. You know, as it pertains to marketing, are they interested in kind of, you know, the digital social space, you know, email? I mean, a lot of things have become very specialized. And so I think that there certainly is kind of the general marketing role, which is one I'm in. I'm very much more of a generalist on things, but you can certainly get very specified. I also think that, you know, one thing that I try to tell people as it pertains to working in sports is I think that people have a very myopic focus oftentimes about working for a team. They feel like working in sports equals a team and a protein is that. And frankly, you know, and I'm even guilty of that myself, but there's so many other opportunities beyond that, from sports agencies to, you know, big companies will have sometimes a person that handles sports accounts for them. You know, there's a lot of jobs kind of more on the periphery of sports. I think, you know, places like Adidas and Nike, you know, certainly, I think a lot of people probably categorize them as sports, and they are, but, you know, that's not a team, but it's apparel. It's still a different, it's merchandise. It's a different industry, but yet certainly, you know, related to sports. ESPN, it's sports, but it's media. So, and then emerging technologies like virtual reality. I mean, operations departments are using virtual realities in some capacities to kind of train their athletes. So there's a lot of different ways that one can get involved in sports these days.
That's a really good point. I think you're exactly right. A lot of people do look at it like, I actually remember it was a couple of years ago now, but even Mark Cuban, the owner of the Mavs, was saying that it was silly for people to try to work in sports because there's only so many pro teams. And my initial thought was, he's even thinking too narrow. Like, there's so many other opportunities out there in sports and to get in there. So if you took yourself back, now you mentioned that you're more of a generalist, and we'll get into the details of your career coming up, but you've been in the game for a long time. If you were kind of looking back now and advising students, what do you think are some of those key, most important things that somebody should focus on to thrive in today's marketing world? Obviously, it's a continually changing world, but what are kind of those key attributes in a curriculum that somebody should focus on?
Sure. I think, you know, some of the key things that I would be focusing on now if I was kind of in school and starting over looking to get into sports, I think first and foremost is probably content. And I mean that in a couple of ways. I think, you know, first, content is really become the way brands communicate. I mean, social media is kind of, you know, Twitter has fast replaced the press release. So I think understanding social media and the capabilities and the digital space and all of that is key. Secondly, I think as it pertains to content is with so many people cutting the cord on TV and cable packages,
right?
You know, the location where people are watching games is going to shift at some point. And I don't know who's going to really make that first kind of move, but you're seeing, you know, the streaming services, Facebook, YouTube, you know, Hulu, other streaming sites are getting more heavily into sports. And I think people are rethinking their mega TV deals. And yeah, I think at some point someone's going to make a move and you're going to see a major team do something different. And it's going to kind of open Pandora's box. So I think being well-versed in that space would also be a very smart thing to do. And then, again, I've already kind of said virtual reality, but other emerging technologies that are contributing. I think one of the interesting things about virtual reality, there's so many applications for it in sports. You know, you can have, and I think it's a complex issue. And I don't know when, you know, I think there's a lot of fear for a lot of teams or leagues around kind of how virtual reality will impact the business. Mm-hmm. If they embrace it, like headsets, you know, for fans getting a view of like they're sitting front row at their, you know, on their couch.
Yeah.
But I think I think it's something that probably won't be able to be ignored at some point. You know, yet to see it may not be, but I think some of those emerging technologies, you know, getting involved in those spaces could be, you know, something good to understand.
It's crazy to think that even just, you know, 5 years ago, 7 years ago, all we were talking about was how the sports industry was booming because the broadcast rights deals were so huge. Like networks and regional networks and all these different networks were popping up, were paying so much to get the rights to broadcast deals. And yet now we're saying just a few short years later, the model's changing. It really is. And marketing is one of those fields you really need to stay ahead of.
Yeah, absolutely. And it shows you just how fast, I mean, in general, how fast industries change. But I think it's also very true of the sports industry, you know, because the sports industry is, I mean, you look at the way that teams are structured and you could have a superstar one day and then the next day you're in a totally different position. And, you know, how do you react? And I think that it's a little bit different than product marketing, per se, when you're selling a blender, because that blender's there, you know, and so it's a good test, I think, for people in the sports industry, because they're always kind of have to be so nimble on their feet. You know, it's always kind of like sands shifting beneath their feet on things. So.
It's true. Yeah. Well, speaking of which, you've worked in marketing in Major League Baseball, in the NFL, in the NBA with the Clippers, and even on the product side with Adidas, like you mentioned earlier. How different, in your view, are the approaches and the cultures and the expectations as you change through leagues or even on the product side? How different is it from company to company?
Yeah, the leagues and teams are all very different, but also very much the same.
Okay.
When I worked in Adidas, one of my best insights that I got from my boss at the time was, how about each sporting business unit in Adidas acted like their sport. So for example, I worked in running and soccer. Those were my two sporting categories. And,
awesome.
You know, the running business unit was super individualistic. They had their own opinions. They did their own things. You go to each one of them separately for buy-off and approval on things. Whereas the soccer guys, the soccer unit, they kind of moved as a team and they made decisions to go, you know, collectively. They had each other's backs. No one stood out above anyone else who's like, try to be the lead. And I noticed this as I work at different leagues and teams. You know, again, for example, baseball is very relaxed. I mean, if you lose a game, you make a mistake on something, it's very much kind of a brush it off mentality, and you have 80 more games to get it right. You know, football, on the other hand, you know, every game is life or death sometimes.
Yeah.
So it feels like that way in the office too. You know, when there's one mistake, I mean, you may sign a sponsorship deal and you have one chance to get it right. And because it's a one game deal. And if you get it wrong, I mean, you got to return that money basically. It doesn't work, right?
Right.
Where in baseball, they're signing an 80 game deal. So if you mess it up once, well, you got 79 times to make it up. So, it varies a lot there. But ultimately there are more similarities than differences. You know, you usually have small front offices, people working collectively together, to accomplish their goals. You know, it often feels kind of wherever you go, it often kind of starts feeling like a family. I think where that's different than a place like Adidas, you know, it felt a bit different to me when I was there because, you know, it operates a little bit more like a big corporation. And just naturally, there are that many more people.
Yep.
You know, and it was a sense of more competitiveness as well, you know, because there may be, you know, I was in the events department, there may be five other people that do events. And then one boss. And so it's kind of like, well, everyone's looking out for that opportunity to potentially get promoted, right? And
right.
Whereas at sports teams, it's all pretty flat. So it's like no one's coming for my job and I'm not going for anyone else. And so it's like we all just kind of work together to get things done, if that makes sense. I feel like there's more of a sense of general teamwork than you'd find in a lot of other places.
That's really interesting. So I was looking back through your resume, and you were with the San Francisco Giants during their dynastic run. Is it different coming to work each day and trying to be creative and coming up with new campaigns and new concepts when the team is really performing at a high level? Or do you have to kind of stay steady and consistent no matter what happens out on the field? I have to imagine we're all human, right? There's got to be more energy that comes from when the team is doing really well, right?
Yeah, I mean, yes and no, right? Like, is there a different energy? Of course. I mean, it's, like you said, it's hard not to. You know, when the team's performing on the field, there's a buzz. You know, people are alive. you know, we're all in this business because we love sports, and I think it's only natural to feel more creative, more motivated, and want to help that team kind of propel further during, you know, during runs like this.
Yeah.
I think it gives you spark, keeps you going. You know, that said, of course, you also have to stay steady, right? You have to come up with the big ideas, even when the team isn't performing. And in some ways, that's also super motivating because you want to pick your team up. You want to do something extra to provide that lift. I do have a great story I can share with you here, and it's something that I'm actually really proud of. We had a 6-game homestand in 2010 to close out the regular season. And going into it, I think we had a 2-game lead over the Padres with 3 to play against them coming up. And Giants GM Brian Sabian called me into the office, and, you know, this is not something he had ever done before. So it was a pretty big deal. And, you know, he challenged my boss and I to really take the fan experience to the next level for the final 6 games, and was really all about wanting us to create a very intimidating atmosphere to play in that was akin to New York or Philly. And, you know, he wanted AT&T Park to feel like that. And, you know, it lit a fire because, you know, I think we're West Coast guys, and we thought to ourselves, like, what, you know, what's he saying? He's saying Philly and New York are like, do it better. and so one of the things I had, you know, I had this idea for a new Take the Field video, and I was really inspired. And I just had this, like, I know that this is going to be impactful. This is going to move mountains. And I wrote a script, storyboarded it, sent it on to producers to kind of work their magic and edit it together. And I remember standing outside the dugout, cueing the video from the field and watching one by one as every player turned, eyes glued to the screen. And Jonathan Sanchez was the Giants pitcher at the time. You know, he took the mound and he proceeded to start the game by throwing 4 of the wildest pitches you've ever seen thrown consecutively. And immediately drawing a visit from the pitching coach. And, you know, my boss and I were cringed a little bit, and we were like, oh God, what have we done? You know, like, wondering kind of, is this video, you know, was it the video? Like, what was this, is nerves? What's going on?
Up. Yeah.
And sure enough, the game, a game that we did go on to win behind a brilliant pitching performance, I might add.
Yeah.
The announcer actually said that in the post-game recap on the radio that it was, quote, irresponsible for us for making too good of a video, which is, you know, is kind of hard not to just laugh at. You're like, okay, you know, talk about the impact that you can have. And the kicker was Jonathan Sanchez, because to some degree you're still like, was that really what set him off? And, you know, that next day he came up and asked for a copy of the video. And he said he wanted to watch it every game before the rest of the season before it starts, because it got him so fired up.
Man, that is so awesome.
You know, it's a really cool example of being able to contribute off the field to the product on the field, and how you can kind of take your game to the next level too, and feel inspired during you know, key moments.
How motivating is that? That's crazy. And you know what? I had Jonathan Sanchez on my fantasy team that year, so I actually remember that exact game you're talking about. That was crazy. That's really cool. I haven't seen the video, but we'll have to see if that's on YouTube somewhere. When you first broke in, the whole world was different, right? I mean, social media and apps were just kind of entering society. How dramatically have things changed from a marketing approach and delivery when you started in the industry until today? I mean, we were talking earlier about how quickly things change. How dramatic is it?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there's a lot of things that stay the same, but certainly a lot of technology stuff has changed how we do things. So, you know, social media, again, like I said, like, it's changed how brands communicate, and probably more importantly, the speed at which they need to communicate. I mean, back when I started, MySpace was just getting going.
Right.
I remember creating ticket deals on MySpace, and no one had any idea what I was doing. Yeah. And I was like, just give me a ticket offer that I can put on MySpace. And I think one game I sold $8,000 worth of tickets to a kind of nothing game, and my VP of marketing looked at me just like, how?
Yeah.
We've come a long way since then, but I think, you know, now when something big happens, you know, teams used to huddle together and respond with some carefully crafted press release, you know, or like take out a newspaper ad, and, you know, the next day, or a billboard ad addressing it, you know, if it was trying to recraft their brand. But now it's basically you know, a tweet, right? Or,
yeah.
or you know, it's instant feedback with social media that you need to get something out there. You need damage control, or you need to, you know, it's all kind of spun via that social media pathway. And, you know, kind of on that flip side, something else could happen that has nothing directly to do with you, but, you know, like somebody puts out a meme that goes viral that is negative about you, and,
yep.
you know, suddenly you're stuck on how do we respond to that? So I think it's just so much faster now. It comes at you so much faster, and it's so much more kind of authentically, your brand is so much more authentically curated via social content. So that's a big one.
Yeah.
I think another change is how everything is driven with data. You know, it's social, you know, from a data perspective, nowadays, you know, it's all about getting data of people so you can put together special segmented offers and really target your fan base better. You know, I feel like marketing used to be, well, hey, you love sports, come on out. But now it's, okay, well, we know that so-and-so is from Minnesota. We know that they have a connection to Minnesota in some capacity based on the data. Or we know that they bought a ticket against the, you know, the Timberwolves last time they were in town. So now we can send them a specially targeted offer. We don't have to waste the other guy's time because we know that this is the person that's likely to buy. And I think having that understanding is, again, like that wasn't there back when I started. And then the secondhand ticket market is also huge. I think it makes consumers more savvy. And I don't think that they feel like they need to always buy from a team. And, you know, it may have changed a little bit the scarcity mentality among fans as it relates to tickets. So whereas before, you know, you really feel like, oh, I got to buy this ticket. Otherwise, you know, games can sell out.
Yep.
And now I think people just know, oh, I can always go on StubHub. There'll always be a ticket. Yeah, I may have to pay more, but I can always go there. And
yeah.
I think that makes people buy tickets later, which makes it challenging for teams. So yeah, I think those are three big things
that
I would say have changed the industry.
No kidding. Those are really three big things. Those are really good points. So I have to imagine you're in LA now. You're the director of marketing with the Clippers. That's an incredible role. You mentioned earlier you have more of a generalist approach. Take us through a little bit of your current role and kind of your responsibilities and what kind of your day looks like, that sort of thing of, you know, where do you lean into the most?
Yeah, you know, well, I will say that the daily responsibility is a pretty tough one because it really always feels like it can be changing depending on what's going on.
Yep.
I'd say a lot of it is, you know, working with executive management to define the brand, tell the story, kind of who, you know, figure out who we are, and how we tell those stories through all of our different channels. Working with our ad agency to buy media, and push, you know, ticket sales and branding messages. Developing and ordering all of our game day giveaways, so all the promotional items that you get when you come to the game, any sort of theme nights or marketing partnerships that tie into a lot of the different NBA platforms. Working with our game presentation director and my boss in our overall, what is the overall fan experience that fans are enjoying when they come to the game? How does that tie into our brand story? Obviously, working closely with, you know, digital content and as it pertains to our story and promoting our different theme nights and our brand, and then helping with large scale kind of event execution of any of the different events that we have. So, you know, I'm kind of dabbling in a lot of different areas. Have to be proficient in a lot of different areas. And I think, you know, again, as I mentioned, that a lot of people today are kind of, there's a lot of specification that's happening. And I think I came up at a time in sports when there was a lot more kind of the generalist role. And so I can touch on a lot of these areas. I can adapt to getting in all these areas where I think, you know, there's some younger people in sports as they're starting to come up that may be kind of being more, you know, going down a specific path. And there's not a right or a wrong there. It's just kind of different ways that the industry has evolved.
Yeah, it's true. And we always tell people, you know, try to be as versatile as you can. Try to pick up new skills. Try to learn something new. Because the more versatile you are, the more valuable you are. And that sometimes falls on deaf ears. So I'm glad that you said that as well. How hard is it? You're in LA. It's the entertainment hub of the world. How hard is it to get the Clippers brand and your events to stand out in such a competitive region?
Yeah, it's a big challenge. It really is. You know, there's so many sports teams too, above and beyond all the entertainment. You know, there's 10 major teams really here. And then you have the beach and you have comedy. I mean, there's so many amazing things to do in LA. It's really hard. You know, and it's not like a lot of places where, and come the winter, it's cold and it's, you know, maybe not a lot to do. Like, it's sunny year round, you can hike, yeah. You can go to the beach. So it's really hard to kind of get people's attention. And I'll actually give you a great example of this. I'm from Seattle, and I was up there for the holidays, and I saw on several local news channels a story about a player who got a signed helmet from the entire Seahawks team. And it was their spouse was basically videoing them opening their present and kind of freaking out, and it went viral, and it was a very cool kind of authentic feeling fan story and made news. So, you know, I saw that and I thought, like, how cool would this be to do? And so, you know, we put together, we called up some of our MVPs, season ticket holders, and we found some that we knew were diehards, and we knew that had some, like, you know, this person's always wanted to sit courtside, or like, yeah. Oh my God, this person just, their kid, they have twins, and they love, you know, they love one of our players. And so what we did is we basically coordinated one of the members of that family to, we wrapped a gift for them, put it under the Christmas tree, said from the Clippers, and then we had someone filming it. I think we did about 5 of these. And, you know, again, one was 2-year-old or 5-year-old twins getting matching signed jerseys from their favorite player. Another yeah. one was sitting courtside. Another one was a meet and greet with their favorite player. And we took all the footage and we kind of put them all together and we put it out. And, you know, the idea was, okay, look, this is the media. Let's have that same type of story. And, you know, the videos performed well, but we didn't really crack anything on TV or any sort of media outlets. It's that much harder to get through, you know, with what you're doing, because there's just so much more going on. The news is like, no, like this isn't a story for us. So, and I think the other way it shows is when you're working with talent, you know, and a lot of cities, a minor act that maybe they haven't put out an album in 5 years or 10 years would still be a huge deal. It would sell out an arena, get all kinds of local press. And here, I mean, unless we have Jay-Z or Beyonce performing at halftime, yep. fans just aren't that excited. They can go see that fan at the Forum or wherever they want to go. So,
yeah. It's funny. I was thinking of this as you were speaking, that I started out at CNN Sports Illustrated in Atlanta, pretty major hub, you know, East Coast, all that kind of thing. And then when I moved and went to Seattle to work at Fox Sports Northwest, my first day in the Seattle market, I turned on like the local news, and the lead story that night was like a moose in the road. And I thinking just like I was in a totally different world, right? It's a totally different yeah. landscape of what makes the stories or what's relevant to the audience. And it's a huge challenge to continually know your audience and what's going to make them tick. Does that kind of challenge? I mean, does that help you in a way? Does that competitive nature kind of bring something out in you that drives you in a way? And do you think it's really important for somebody that wants to work in marketing to have that kind of competitive nature that's willing to do whatever and be creative to get your brand to stand out?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it makes you better for it. It's certainly hard, but if you can move the needle and reach people effectively in LA, which I think, you know, I think everywhere else you go, it'll be, you know, yeah. And I think that even includes New York, because although it's a big city, I think New York is so much more of a sports crazed town than LA. But again, kind of going back to some of the reasons why I said earlier, but I think that if you can do that here, you can do it anywhere. And I do think the sense of competitiveness is pretty standard in sports. I mean, if you like sports, you're probably naturally a very competitive person. So it's very likely that you would have that drive to kind of say, okay, well, we're gonna break through here. We're gonna stand out.
Yeah. So you've managed many people over your career. How would you describe your style and approach as a leader? And how has that kind of changed from when you first started as a manager of people or projects or whatever? What's just kind of your overall style and strategy?
Sure. I mean, generally, I'm pretty relaxed most of the time. You know, I don't like to be micromanaged myself, and so I don't really micromanage others. I like to show people kind of how I do things and why, but I let them figure out things for themselves.
Yeah.
Really, I believe in hiring someone that is smarter than you. Give them every resource possible. Clear the hurdles for them when they start coming their way, and then get out of their way and let them do the job. I also think it's important to let people kind of get creative and explore some of their own passions. You know, even if you don't always know how it aligns perfectly with what you need them to do, because I think sometimes that extra bit of creativity can infuse in their day. They might need that, and maybe it inspires them into something, or it ends up becoming a new business opportunity or a new way of solving a problem that you didn't think of. I believe in setting examples. When I was the marketing manager at the Giants, I ran a team of 15 or so people on promotional staff.
Yeah.
And they would have to, you know, fire up the crowd, run into the crowd, throw them t-shirts and all of those things like that. And actually, just before I hired that team, I took a job on the hoop tube for the Warriors, because I wanted my staff to know that I knew how to do, and I did exactly what I was asking of them.
So that is so cool. What a great idea.
Challenging, you know, they couldn't look at me and say, "Hey, you do that." I'd say, I do it every night. Do you need me to get a clip and show it to you? Like, I'll show you how it's done. And I think that's important to be able to put yourself in that situation. It's kind of like, you know, I don't know if they still do it, but I'd always heard that Disney makes its executives put on the costumes and walk around so they can understand what it's like to be in their employee's shoes and go, okay, like, I understand their challenges. And I wanted to do that. And so, you know, I don't ever want to ask people to do things that I don't want to do or that I can't do myself. And how it's changed, I think one thing, you know, I think I've had some great managers over the years, and I think that what they've taught me about leadership is that if I can, I try to be more than a manager. Because I think life is more than one's work. I mean, people have dreams. They want to pursue personal lives, families, things that come up. And I've always found that if you care more about the person that you're managing, if you vow to have their back, to take responsibility for mistakes, to protect them, to treat them right, and look out for their best interests, even if it doesn't always align with yours, that they will be loyal to the end to you, and they won't leave, and they will be internally motivated to work hard. And I think that person will then say, you know, I will do whatever I possibly can to achieve the goals that the manager deems important. And I know that, you know, I'll know that one day they move on, that they'll help you fill that gap when you need it. They'll never leave you in a lurch. And I think it's just kind of that fair trade-off. And so, you know, I try to be that manager to other people. And people have different working styles. So if it's something they want, then I'll be that. And if it's not, then, you know, we can have kind of a standard boss-employee relationship. But that's what I like to do.
Joe, you sound like a pretty cool guy to work for. I'm not going to lie to you. So we'll flip this around for a second. What about when you're hiring? What kind of attributes or skills are you looking for? What are those kind of key elements that you've identified that if somebody has these skills, I can generally see that they're going to work out in this industry, or these attributes, or whatever it is? What stands out to you?
Yeah, you know, I think for me, really the characters I've identified, I think character, work ethic, and passion are the most important. And the reason I say that, I don't, you know, sports marketing, it's just like any other industry. It's complex. It's got its challenges. It's got its, you know, things you need to be an expert in various areas, but it's not rocket science, right? Like in most cases, you can learn to be very good at a job in the sports field. So when you hire people, you know, you can hire, you know, some people say, I'm going to hire someone because they're really creative or because they're really tactical, or super detail oriented, or they're really big picture, but you can find people like that and you can mix and match them. I don't think that, you know, there's a lot of creative people. There's a lot of detail oriented people. But I think if you can find a group of people that are all, you know, if they have a good character and a good moral framework, a good attitude, you know, I think it's part of that, a good work ethic, they're always going to work hard no matter what, they're going to give it their best effort, and they're passionate about what they do. I think if you have those three things, then you can mix and match a team of people with different skill sets, but you know you're going to succeed.
Joe, that is awesome. I cannot thank you enough for coming on the show. You've given us such great insight, and I'm jealous of your LA weather and fun things to do as I'm sitting in here in like 100% humidity. So thank you so much for coming on.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
I meant what I said. Joe seems like an incredible boss. One of the things that really stood out to me was Joe describing the different cultures in the pro teams and product world. Fascinating that the teams within Adidas mirrored their sport, that the team that supported running was more individual, and the team that supported soccer was more team-oriented. You take on the personality of your sport. It's crazy. And the fact baseball was more laid back, like, oh, well, we'll get them tomorrow. We've got 81 home games. While the NFL, with only 8 home games, you had to be on the money each time, and there was a different level of intensity. So important to know these things and to see where your personality fits best. Thanks so much for listening, and don't forget about our Sports Career Accelerator, September 13th and 14th in Atlanta. Visit workinsports.com/Atlanta for more info and to be added to our interest list. Talk to you all soon.